I have what I call the Bible for the night of the Seder. This is show and tell tonight. This is a Sefer which I picked up recently called HaSeder HaOruch, which means organizing and arranging your Seder. And I've begun to go through this Sefer. It's written by Rav Yaakov Weingarten. I don't know who he is, but he did a splendid job here. So my goal during the period of time that we have allotted to us is to go through some of this Sefer. Obviously, we cannot go through the whole Sefer. It's about 600 pages long, just on the night of the Seder. It's literally endless. So what I'm going to try to do is highlight some of what I found as interesting and as important. Let me begin with a short discussion about a siyum. A firstborn has to fast on the day before Pesach. And the reason for that is because, as you know, Hashem, in the last of the 10 plagues, destroyed the firstborn of the Egyptians. And the firstborn of the Jews were also in danger. That's because the mashkis, the destructive force, could have taken the lives of the firstborn amongst the Jews as well. So in order to get out of that situation, we need what's called a tainis, a fast. And therefore, the firstborn should fast. Now, in order to avoid that fast, because no one likes fasting, especially on Erev Yontif, we make a siyum. I don't know if you've ever been present in some of the places that I hang out with. They have one siyum after the other. It's like a line of siyumim. So what I found here is something very interesting in this Sefer. In the name of both Rav Avadi Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein, they both came up with the same idea that you don't have to complete a full Masechta in order to make this seal. Can you imagine a firstborn goes into a pressure situation because he's not about to finish Masechta Bava Basra? It's got 180 pages and he's bekoshi halfway through, so what does he do? So they write that he could complete one book of the 24 books of the Holy Writ, meaning Sefer Echad Michof Dalet Sifrei HaKodesh, just one Sefer. My favorite would be Megillas Esther. I love Esther. And if not a full book of Tanakh, then a full Masechta of Mishnayos. So a person could start the Mishnayos of Bava Basra and finish all the Mishnah of Bava Basra and make a siyum. And they add one proviso, that you have to understand what you're learning. This is not an exercise in reading, but you need to go through at least one of the Pirushim to guarantee that you understand. But nevertheless, as far as Megillas Esther is concerned, I don't think it would take a great deal of work to get through it. So we have someone to rely on and a pinch if we can't get to a seal. But now they ask a different question. The halach is as follows. When there is a mitzvah of fasting, like we have many days in the Jewish calendar year that are fasting, then the law is that if I ate at some point during the fast day, I still have to complete the fast. Why is it that if I am a Bechor and I have to fast before Pesach and I participate in a siyum, I eat, a fig or a date or whatever they give me out there, you know, some kidneys or so for Oakley kidneys, and after I eat, that's it. I don't have to fast the remainder of the day. And they give a very fascinating answer. They say the following. That every fast has two parts to it. One is a mitzvah of tainus, a mitzvah of fasting. And the other is an iser achila, a prohibition against eating. Meaning, you know, we divide up the Torah into positive commands and negative commands. A fast has, in the classical sense, both dimensions to it. It's got the positive dimension of a tainus, and it has the negative dimension of an iser achila. If a person on a fast day eats, let's say, you know, unintentionally he takes something into his mouth, okay, Maybe he forfeits the tainus, but he still has an Isra Achila. That Isra Achila takes him from the beginning of the fast until the end of the fast. In a case of Yom Kippur or Tisha B'Av, it's a 24-hour deal. So if he ate midway, okay, he forfeited the mitzvah for the kiyum of tainus, but he still has an Isra Achila. The Isra Achila is not removed once he eats. However, with regard to tainus b'choros, there's no Isra Achila. The fast of the firstborn is purely a kiyum of tainus, meaning in order to achieve divine chesed and divine, rachamim bedin, instead of the judgment that was meted out to the Egyptians, our b'choros have to fast. That's a kiyum tainus. Well, comes along the siyum, and the siyum says you have to eat and participate in the mitzvah of siyum. Once you do so, you no longer have a mitzvah and obligation of tainus of fasting. But you should still be enjoined from eating because the Isra tainus, the Isra achila, excuse me, there never was an Isra achila. Chazal never established an Isra achila. So we have two categories of tainus. One is a tainus that has an Isra achila, and the other is a tainus which is only a kiyum tainus. And once I break my fast, that kiyum tainus is completely gone, and therefore there's no point to continue fasting. Did I make myself clear? Okay, let's go on. I want to talk to you about preparing for the Seder.
But why couldn't that apply to other fasts as well?
Because every other fast, by definition, has this double-edged sword. It's number one, a mitzvah, a kiyum of tainus, and number two, at the same time, it's an isur that enjoins me from eating. And even if I violated the tainus, I still have hovering over my head the Isra Achila. Not so in the way that Chazal established the tainus of Bechor, they only established it as a kiyum tainus without an Isra Achila. Okay. Charoses. I found something very interesting about charoses. I don't know how many people here participate in the preparation of charoses, and there are like 1,000 different minhagim, based on your local custom and the tradition that you received as to how to make the charoses. But what was I fascinated by? What is the point and what's the purpose of charoses? So on page, I'm just opening up to the right page, Kuf Lamed Bet, he says the following. Number one, he says that the purpose of charoses, this was a new idea for me, I don't know if it'll be a chiddush for you, is zecha l'geula, to remind ourselves of the redemption. How so? What does charoses have to do with redemption? And he says the following. That if you go through Shir HaShirim, which is, according to Chazal, a love story between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael, you will see that the people of Israel, who are described as the beloved Kala, the bride of God, are described with certain particular fruits. For example, the Pasuk says, Tachas HaTapuach Orartich, in which case Klal Yisrael are compared to a tapuach, to an apple. A rimon, which is a pomegranate, kepelach harimon rikatich, te'eno, which is a date, a fig, excuse me, hate'eno chonto fageha, tamar is a date, amarti ele bitamar, egoz, a nut, a walnut, el ginat egoz yaradati. And therefore he says that the following fruits should be added, again this is all depending on your custom, but I'm just learning it conceptually with you, to your charoses. Number one, tapuach. Number two, egos. Number three, te'eno. And number four, tamar. So you should have a mixture of apples and nuts and figs and dates. All because of Zecha L'Geula, the fact that God loves us and therefore He redeems us from the slavery of Mitzrayim. So that's element number one. Element number two. He says that one should add Yayin, wine, to the Charoses. And that's for a whole different reason. That's Zecher L'Dam. That's in order to remember the blood of the firstborn boys, male boys, that were killed by the Mitzrayim. And therefore, he says, you should not use white wine, but rather red wine, Yayin Adom, because red wine is reminiscent of blood. So now we have a double zeicha. We have zeicha l'geula and zeicha l'dam. But it doesn't stop there. He says that in addition, we should add to this mixture pears, agasim. I don't know. I honestly never ate charoset with pears in it. But he said the reason for pears is that pears add a certain color to the other fruits that are in the charoset. And that color, he says, is the tzeva of tit, which is the color of cement, you know, kind of a, I don't know what we'd call it, a flesh brownish color. And that becomes a zecher to that which Klal Yisrael had to create when they built the Pison Varamses and everything else that they built. Then he says we should add tavlinim, we should also add spices. And that, he says, is zecher l'teven, is zecher to straw. I didn't exactly understand why he gives examples of kinnamon, which is cinnamon, and zingabil, I forget exactly what that is, ginger, I think. Why these particular spices are reminiscent of teven. But in any event, this mixture, this concoction called charoses, is a real concoction. It's zeicha l'dam, it's zeicha l'geula, it's zeicha to the Ava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Knesset Yisrael, it's zeicha l'tit, and it's zeicha l'teven. And then he tells me another chiddush, which I never knew. He says that we should add the wine to this mixture only after the charoses has been placed on the Seder table. Meaning, when we're preparing the charoses on Erev Pesach, leave out the wine. And he says, why? He says, because the nature of this charoses, to remind us of tit, of cement, is true when it's in a solid kind of a state. When you add the liquid element, namely the yayin, then it softens it up, and lo yehe nikar shezecher l'tit. So we need the yayin as zecher l'dam, but only add the zecher l'dam after you've already achieved the zecher l'tit. When do you achieve the zecher l'tit? That's when you put it on the Seder table. Then, afterwards, you add the wine. Then he says that you should also add chometz, vinegar. I don't know. Can anybody here tell me that they put vinegar into the charoset? It has a very sharp taste. And he says the reason for that is zecher l'chamitzus, to the sharpness of the suffering of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. So my friends, whatever your tradition and your custom is, just make sure that you make charoses, because it has a tremendous amount of significance. Okay, let's go on. Cleaning for Pesach. Here I want to share with you something which I found here, al pi chasidut. This is a Hasidic concept. You know, I come from a more Lithuanian background, but the Hasidim always have some new perspective to add. And they say, basically, what should I have in mind when I'm cleaning for Pesach? Cleaning my soul. I'm purifying my soul. And I'm getting rid of all the filth of what we call tumas chet, of sin. And all this pollution and contamination has to be removed, and symbolically, it's being removed through the cleansing. And he says about the Ari, we've all heard of the Ari who lived 5 centuries ago in the city of Tzfat, that the Arizal, when he was cleaning for Pesach, he would sweat. And especially when he baked the matzahs for Pesach, he would wipe his brow from the sweat. And he would say, this is recorded by Rav Chaim Vital, his outstanding disciple, Zehu Zeh Shel Kedusha. This is the sweat of holiness. And why? He says, because when we say vidui and we confess our sins, one of the sins that we confess on the long list on Yom Kippur is Ritzas Raglayim Lahara. We run and we sweat in order to do evil. Now we have to rectify that through the cleansing process and preparing for Pesach. And we do so by sweating. The sweat is an indication that we're really working very hard over time in order to fix up and rectify any time that we sweat for the sake of evil, because we were running after our pleasures and then we were pleasure seekers. Okay. Fine. What about Erev Pesach? There are two customs about Erev Pesach. One custom is that from daybreak and on, we don't do malacha, we don't do work. I'll explain what that means. I'm sure the women are very excited to hear that. Right? No work on Erev Pesach. Ki'ilu, right? And the other minhag is that up until midday, which is called Chatzot Hayom, we abstain from work. But everybody, and this is based on the Gemara in Pesachim, abstains from work from Chatzot, from midday and on. So what I wanted to show you here is A, what does that mean to abstain from work? What's the gedder? What's the definition? And number two, what's the reason why we desist from work on Erev Pesach? And this I found here on page Tzadi Zayin. So let me read to you what he says over here. He says the following. B'tam ha'iser molacha be'erev Pesach achar chatzos. Why is it that we desist from work after midday? He says, l'fi sheyom zeh huzman shechitas ha'pesach. Back in the day when the Migdash stood, we shechted the Korban Pesach on Erev Pesach after chatzos. And the halacha is that on a day of a Korban, the halacha defines that day as a Yom Tov. It's a happy day. In fact, Tosus says that every day of the year should be a Yom Tov because we always bring the Korban Tamid. But he says that that's a Korban Tzibur and that's not in the same definition. Zman HaKrovas HaPesach Michatzos HaYom V'lachein Ein Yisr Moloch Be'erev Pesach El Michatzos HaYom. And this justifies the minhag that we abstain from work from midday on Erev Pesach. He goes on to say that at the time that the Beis HaMikdash stood, that Iser Molocha on Erev Pesach was an Iser Deoraisa, who's by Torah law. However, Bizman has said today that we don't have the Korban Pesach. Hakol Modim, everybody agrees that the Iser is only Midrabbanan, it's only by rabbinic enactment. And here he quotes a sefer called the Minchas Aaron, who says that the Iser Molacha on Erev Pesach is exactly equivalent to the Iser Molacha on Chol HaMoed. What that means is that during the Moed, the 7 days, or in Chutzlar, it's 8 days of Yontif, we have a mitzvah of Simcha. And therefore we don't want to distract ourselves from the Simcha of Yontif, so therefore we abstain from Molacha. Turning on lights, therefore it would be mutter, because it doesn't in any way distract us, what we call hesek hadas, from simcha. A person could be besimcha, and he just flips the switch. But when he does a malacha shel tircha, something that occupies the person, and it requires a certain investment of energy, then he is distracted from simcha, and that's what is prohibited. On Chol HaMoed, it's doraisa, according to most Rishonim. On Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, it's only Drabbana, we don't have the Korban Pesach. So if you were to ask me about washing clothes, again, today we have washing machines, but let's say you were washing clothes by hand, I would say that that should be Asur on Erev Pesach, unless you needed to wear on Pesach, you know, it's your last pair of socks. But if, barring that exception, then you should not do so. In fact, the poskim say that you should not be cutting your nails or taking a haircut after midday on Erev Pesach. Some poskim allow you to have a guy cut your hair because you're not actually preoccupied, so you're just sitting there passive. But these are all kinds of involvements that one should abstain from on Erev Pesach. Number two. The most important preparation for the night of the Seder is the Kara. And the Kara, I don't know how you translate that into English, although truthfully speaking, I don't think anyone here in this room needs a translation for the word Kara. I just don't know. It's very hard for me to gauge, you know, what words I should be translating. What?
A plate.
A plate, a Seder plate, right? It's one of the most beautiful Judaica objects. You know, if you visit the museums, you'll see over the course of Jewish history how creative we were in creating Karo. Some of the creativity is halachic, because we would have to spend 10 hours here tonight, which I don't have and you don't have, to figure out exactly where everything on the Seder plate should be organized. And that's extremely complicated. It's almost as complicated as doing Nanuim during Hallel on Sukkot. But in any event, number one, Karpas. Karpas should be prepared on Erev Pesach. Number two, Morar. These two items both require serious checking. As you know, we have to look for bugs. Now, what is karpas? I don't know what karpas is. Karpas, basically, is anything that requires a bracha called borei pri ha'adama. I knew a great giant of halacha in America. He's no longer alive. His name is Rav Pinchas Teitz. Anybody ever hear that name? No? No one's from Elizabeth, New Jersey? Elizabeth, New Jersey was Pinchas Teitz, Rabbi Teitz. Nothing moved in that city without Rabbi Teitz. In any event, Rabbi Teitz used a banana for karpas. And when I tried to figure out why, he said the following. First of all, he wanted to publicize that you make a borei pri ha'adama on bananas, because there were those who made a borei pri ha'etz on bananas, and he felt that was wrong. And number two, he said, I take a banana because the purpose of karpas is to get the children to ask, why are you dipping? And that's one of the four questions that they ask. Well, the last time I took a banana and I dipped it into salt water was, I don't know when. So that should certainly stimulate the curiosity of the children. And that's why he took a banana. But anyway, you could take parsley, take a potato, whatever you like. But it's got to be a borei pri ha'adama, and it's got to be dipped into mei melach. Mei melach should be prepared before Pesach. Excuse me, before Leil Pesach. Next, Shnei Tavshilin. Okay, we have one Tavshil that's cooked, one Tavshil that's roasted. Generally speaking, we take a shank bone, I think it's called. We call it a flegel, I don't know if it's Yiddish, I guess. And we roast it on the fire. This should be done Erev Pesach. And don't wait to delay to do it. And the same is with an egg, which we cook. That's called Shnei Tavshilin. Next, Yayin. Wine should be prepared. Now, wine should be prepared in various mixtures, so to speak, various types and categories of wine. Some of you may, by chance, come across what's called Yayin Shel Shvius. Last year was a Shemitah year. Did I get that right? Last year was Shemitah, or is it 2 years ago?
Two years ago.
All right, time flies. Anyway, there's still a lot of Yayin Shel Shvius, Shel Shemitah, that's out there in the market for those who rely on the Heter Mechira. I personally don't, but those who do. And you may find that when you look at the label of the wine that's on your table, lo and behold, it's Shvius wine. Has Kedusha Shvius. The Yerushalmi goes back and forth as to whether or not Yayin Shel Shvius can be used on the night of the Seder for the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. Maybe we'll get a chance if we have time to talk about that. But the final conclusion of the Yerushalmi is that you can indeed use Yayin Shel Shvius. But the Rambam says that the mitzvah of drinking wine at the night of the Seder has got to be Shtiyaso Areva Olav in the language of the Rambam, which means it's got to be fitting for the taste buds and the appreciation of every single individual. You may like dry wine, somebody else likes sweet wine. I personally would encourage possibly dry wine, at least for the first cup, because that's a cup of kiddush, and dry wine is not mevushal, it's not cooked. And the Rambam sheet is that for Yayin Shel Kiddush you need Yayin Sheino Mevushal. So you don't have to be machmir for the Rambam the whole year round, but maybe on the night of Pesach you want to take up that one, you know, once in a lifetime, once in the year, chumrah, and use dry wine, which is generally speaking not cooked, it's not Mevushal, for Yayin Shel Kiddush, for the first of the four cups of wine.
If one is highly sensitive to wine, you can drink grape juice, right?
Excellent. What about grape juice? So here's the deal with grape juice. Grape juice is really pushing the envelope. I would not encourage grape juice. For children, I think it's a great idea. For the mitzvah of chinuch, they want to enjoy the Seder, give them grape juice. For adults, wine is preferable. If someone would have a headache from drinking wine, he should absolutely drink grape juice.
And it makes sense.
He could mix it, but again, if all things are equal, I would say it should be mostly wine and the minority should be grape juice. If possible, if you're not getting headaches immediately, then use wine for the first cup, and then for the balance of the other three cups to use grape juice. But again, all this should be prepared before nightfall, and the kalim should be the most beautiful utensils that you want to put on your Seder table. And that should be prepared before Yontif.
Sorry, can you prepare a deadwood wine? Can you
Can you dilute it?
Well, we're going to get to that maybe later, exactly what the percentage of water that you're allowed to add to the wine is, because you need what's called a revius yayin. And we'll talk about the Chazon Ish's opinion, we can talk about Rav Chaim Noah. It all depends on how much we can fit in. And the matzahs. Many people will buy matzahs that are closed in boxes and they don't bother opening the boxes before Yom Tov. Basically, the rule of thumb is do not delay the Seder. At the first opportune moment, the Seder should begin. That's why personally, again, I'm sorry for this editorial comment, but I have trouble with Chazonim on the Leil of Pesach. I'm a big fan of Chazonus. That's not true, actually. But even if I was a big fan of Chazonus, but on the night of Pesach, yeah. Be reasonable about it.
When is the earliest time you can stop?
What do you say?
When is the
earliest? I don't know. And this year's clock, I haven't actually.
The halach takes up
general.
Yeah. We start to say there with Tzeisach Kochavim. I would say the following: that the recitation of the what's called a simonim, you know, the Kaddish Urchatz, that could take place even before nightfall. That's not an integral part of the mitzvah. But certainly Kiddush should take place after nightfall. So let's say nightfall is at 8 p.m. I'm just throwing out a number. Then everything should be prepared before 8 p.m. Now I know that this is a tremendous effort on the part of the lady folk especially, and the men folk have to chip in. But it should be a joint effort. The children should get involved. And in the ideal world, we come back from Mairiv and we start the Seder. Which means that if you have pillows for Heseva, the pillows should be prepared before nightfall. If you have a kittel, and we'll talk about why we wear a kittel on the night of Pesach, then that should be prepared before Pesach. If there's a bag for the Afikoman, that should be prepared. Everything should be prepared in the ideal world. Obviously, the world is not ideal, but that's the way it should be. No delay. That's our goal. Start as soon as we can. We don't want the children to fall asleep. And the whole challenge of this night is to keep them alive and curious and excited. I know my son has this whole shtick, you know, during the meal he gets dressed up as Paro, you know, and he has a whole costume and they throw frogs around. I mean, it's like really, not real frogs. But anyway, they do a whole spiel. Okay, I'm not on that madriga, but that's fine. You know, the idea is to keep the children excited. V'igadeta
l'bincha. Just to clarify, people, yeah. Young kids, they like to start earlier, but they can't get it with the young kids before kids are home.
I think that we paskin like the Ritva. The Ritva is of the opinion that chinuch, when we train our children, it should be as close to the original as possible. We don't buy a lemon for an esrog. Right. And in the case of Leil HaSeder, my humble opinion would be, if you want, I would, you know, research it. If you have a pressing need, is that kiddush should be recited even for the children after nightfall. Okay, now I want to talk to you a little bit about the Dalid Kosos. This is on page Resh Mem He. Okay. Number one, the drinking of Dalid Kosos is a fulfillment of two mitzvos, and in the first kos, a third mitzvah, which is Kiddush. The two mitzvahs are Chayev Adam Laharos Es Atzno Kiluhu Yotza B'Mitzrayim, which means we have to demonstrate Cherus, that we went out to freedom. A free man drinks wine. And number two, the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. That's point number one. If you drink undiluted wine, back in the day they had concentrated wine, the way we go into a, you know, in the frozen section we get these frozen apple juices, orange juices, so that's not considered Simchas Yontif. And although it could be he's yotze part of the mitzvah, but not the total mitzvah, because the mitzvah has to be derech cherus to enjoy the wine, as we said before. Some have the minig that others should pour the wine for you, which means that the, we'll call the balabayit, you know, the one who's organizing the seder, he should have others pour the wine for him. He should pour the wine for others, or anyone else should. And again, to ask each participant at the seder table what they would enjoy. That's not just tam minhag. That's really part and parcel of the mitzvah of derech cherus. In fact, every one of the four kosos has to be organized and arranged to attach to a brach. There are four kosos and four brachos. Bracha number one is kiddush, which completes with Baruch Atah Hashem Kaddish Yisrael Vazmanim. coast number two ends with Baruch HaTashem Gal Yisrael. That's the main coast, if I had to focus on one, because that's the coast of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim. Coast number three is Birkas HaMazon, and coast number four is Hallel, or Shira, as it's called. Fine. Go ahead.
You're going to the States, and you have to sit, and you will be sitting at a second seder.
That's a bit complicated. What's the deal with an Israeli in Chutzarts? That requires at least an hour's discussion. But let me say the following. As a general rule, again, there are always going to be fine points that has to be ironed out, but an Israeli in Chutzarts should act as if he lived in Chutzarts, meaning he should have, he or she, all the mitzvahs of the night and fulfill them as if he were in Chutzlaretz. This becomes extremely complicated when it comes to the last day of Yontif, where in Chutzlaretz we call it Shmini Shal Chag. No one's eating chametz, of course. And you're an Israeli and you want to do malacha. And you want to eat bread. So what do? Forget about eating bread. No way, no how. Get yourself on a plane back. Although I'm not sure you're allowed to take a plane. But that's also complicated. As far as malach is concerned, maybe you could lock yourself in a room and use a computer if it has no noise. Just make sure you shut off the speakers. Okay, but that's complicated. So I would say, as a general rule, again, if your question is relevant, speak to your local Orthodox rabbi, or if you want to talk to me after the class, you should be observing Yom Tov Sheni as if you were living in Chutzlaretz, even though you're only there for that week. Who's obligated in the four cups of wine? Certainly men, and certainly women. Women are usually exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. The answer is, af hein hayu bi oso hanes. The greatest experience of the miracle, in terms of halacha, is to experience the drinking of the Dalit Kosos. That's called cherus in the Gemara. And therefore, women like men have to drink the Dalit Kosos. And I emphasize this because in my experience in life, I've seen women who are a little bit laid back about it, especially when you get to the third and fourth cups, then they're out of it, and that's a problem. They have to drink all four cups. The Gemara tells us about certain Amoraim who would drink four cups of wine, and for the next 7 weeks, until they got to Shavuos, they were wibbly wobbly. They couldn't stand straight on 2 feet. Maybe they should have drunk grape juice. There's a machlokas as to a katan, a child, whether he is obligated in the mitzvah of Dalit Kosos. Meaning, it could be that in general, the child is not obligated in mitzvahs. His father or his mother have to educate him. The chiyuv chinuch is on the father. But in the case of Dalit Kosos, it could be that the child himself has his own personal obligation to drink the Dalit Kosos because of af hein hayu b'oso hanes. And that's called a katan shehigia l'chinuch. A katan shehigia l'chinuch is usually 5, 6, or 7. And this really depends upon the maturity of the child. It's a very subjective kind of thing. Sometimes you could have a 5-year-old who really doesn't understand that much. You can have a 5-year-old that's precocious and understands more than the average 7-year-old. They say 5 going on 13, And that's what it is. In any event, when we give the children Dalit Kosos, because they reach that age, we should give them the same shear, the same amount of wine that we would give for ourselves as gedolim. And what is the shear? How much? Again, I'm fast forwarding here a little bit of wine that we should be drinking. So here we have a machlokas between Rav Chaim Noah, who is a Rav here in Beit Vagan, and the Chazon Ish. Rav Chaim Noah says that Revius Yayin, which has to be drunk for the four cups, is 86 grams. I don't know how much that is in ounces. Joe, can you?
86 milliliters.
Okay. 86 milliliters. And the Chazon Ish says it's almost twice that amount, 150 milliliters. Now, what I would encourage personally, again, I'm sorry I'm giving you all this editorial information here, is not to use very large cups for the wine. Because the Rambam's opinion, and the Ramban agrees, the Ran agrees, is that you have to drink Rov Kos. no matter how large the kos is. So you could have a cup that's for Og Melech HaBashan, and if you use that cup, you're going to have to drink rove of that kos, at least according to those shitos. So it's not always absolutely 86 gram or 150 gram. It's depending upon the size of the kos. Now, should you drink the entire kos? Well, some poskim say that lechatchili should drink the entire kos, finish it up to the last drop. But certainly, if a person is challenged, then b'dieved could rely on those poskim who say that it's enough to drink rov kos, and that represents the preponderant majority, by far, of the poskim. Now, the mitzvah of matzah on the Leil of Pesach is doraisa, and we have to cherish that, because there are very few mitzvahs that we have of achila, of eating or drinking, that still apply today midoraisa, as if we were back in the time that the Torah was given at Har Sinai. So many of our mitzvahs, including the night of Pesach, Maror and Pesach, Korban Pesach, are gone. They're all rabbinic. I mean, we don't have rabbinic mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach, but we do have rabbinic mitzvah of eating the Maror. But matzah is doraisa. In the case of Dalet Kosos, clearly we're talking about a mitzvah dirabanan, a rabbinic mitzvah. Nevertheless, Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe, used to say that there's something very special and unique about the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. And that is that although the obligation to drink the four cups is dirabanan, nevertheless the mitzvah itself is doraisa. It's a Torah mitzvah. Because the Rambam says, Chayav Adam Laharos Es Atzmo, a person has to show and demonstrate that he left Mitzrayim. And therefore, says the Rambam, he has to drink Dalet Kosos. So the mitzvah of demonstrating that I left Mitzrayim is fulfilled by drinking the Dalet Kosos. That mitzvah to demonstrate that I left Mitzrayim is a mitzvah doraisa. So that it's very paradoxical. On the one hand, the obligation was organized or established by the Rabbanon, which makes it a classical mitzvah the Rabbanon. But on the other hand, the mitzvah that I obtain is a kium do rice. And that's how Rav Soloveitchik explained why the Gemara has so many chumras, so many strict laws. A poor person who cannot afford four cups of wine has to take money from what's called a tamchui, that's the soup kitchen, that's communal funds that are usually designated for someone who's at the verge of starvation. And those monies have to be earmarked and dedicated for the Dalet Kosos of a poor person. That's part of Kimcha de Pischa. Kimcha de Pischa is because matzah is extremely expensive. But Dalet Kosos also could be, today, Baruch Hashem, you can get wine for pennies. But nevertheless, the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos is a very important mitzvah. Now, here's a question I wanted to ask you that came as a chiddush to me. Between the four cups, do we have to wash out the kos? Now, here's an interesting halach, which I didn't think was relevant, and I never saw it, but I'm just sharing it with you, because he makes a big deal about it. There's a halacha called a koshel bracha, which means the halachic status of a cup of wine that's used for a bracha, whether it's Birkas HaMazon, whether it's Sheva Brachas for Chasam Vakala, whether it's Havdola Motzei Shabbos, and so forth and so on. Bersmila. In a case of a kosher bracha, there's a halacha of shtifa. Shtifa means we have to clean out the kos before we drink from it. And he brings here a school of thought that between each one of the kosos, not just before the first kos, we should wash out the cup. And he says, even though there are poskim who are more lenient and don't require it, because after all, whatever is left, the residue is wine from the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos, nevertheless, he says, you have to guarantee that the kos is nikiya, it's clean. Like, let's say, for example, different, crumbs, yeah, whatever fell into the kos. You have to, according to everyone, clean out that kos before you use it for the second or the third or the fourth. How do we drink the kos? It's got to be beheseba, which means we lean on the left side. What happens in an event, and this happens every year at my Seder table, somebody says, well, I'm not going to give the first word because that'll give it away, but they say, oh, I forgot to do heseba. So the deal is like this. there's a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. The Ashkenazim require a bracha, which is called Bori Priya Gofen, a bracha Rishona, on each one of the four cups of wine. The Sfaradim only make a Bori Priya Gofen on coast number one and coast number two. And coast number three, meaning Kiddush and Birkas HaMazon. Coast Shnia, Urevius, number two, which is Gal Yisrael, and number four, which is Halil, they don't make a Bori Priya Gofen. And all this is going to touch and be relevant to our question of someone who forgot to do Heseba. Okay then? Okay, I'm trying to find... Okay. So it works like this. I can't, of course, there's so many thousands of pages here, I can't find exactly where I'm looking for. But in any event, if he went ahead and he drank the wine without Heseba... Hesed meaning leaning, right? Okay. That's an important word I have to translate. Then, should he drink the cup a second time? So it works like this. For Ashkenazim, since they make a Bori Priya Gofen, before every kos, every cup, therefore, if... Are you with me on that? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your conversation. Okay, let me get back to what I wanted to say. Okay. Oh, by the way, before I forget, I have to tell you that just like the mitzvah of matzah requires nightfall, so to the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos, in this case Kiddush the first, requires nightfall. All this is based on Korban Pesach, where it says, V'yochel es habosa b'layla, so it's got to be b'layla. And at the end of the day, like bookends, the drinking of the fourth kos has to take place before chatzos, because the Korban Pesach was eaten, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we seem to paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, I liked his father's name a lot, before chatzos. So the kiyum of all the mitzvahs of the night should take place in this sandwich between Seisach Kochavim, nightfall, and chatzos. Okay. Now, if a person forgot to do Heseba, the leaning, so it says the following, that, and I'm still looking for the page, he says the following, Leminagenu, according to the Ashkenazic custom, then Ein Shosim Bein Kos Rishono L'Shnia. We don't drink an extra cup of wine between the first and the second kosos. And therefore, kisheshasa kos rishona below haseba, if he drank the first cup without haseba, einol choser vishose behaseba, he should not repeat the drinking. Why? Because we don't want to add a cup of wine between the first and the second. Now, what demonstrates that we're adding another cup of wine? The fact that we are going to recite Bori Priya Gofen. Now, the Ashkenazic minhag is that every one of the four kosos requires a Bori Priya Gofen. So if I'm going to be machmir and I'm going to say, well, I wasn't yotze on the first cup for the four kosos because I didn't do Heseba, and I'm going to have to make a Bori Priya Gofen on this extra cup, and then it looks to the onlooker, to the spectator, as if I'm drinking five cups of wine. That's called Nira Kemosif al Hakosos. Here, the magic number is four, and not more than four. We don't have any room for going beyond. Now, if he drank the second kos below Haseba, then he should drink the second kos another time around, with Heseba, obviously, but below Bracha. And the reason for this is that once he drank the second kos, he's already begun the Seuda, technically. He's begun his meal. And you're allowed to drink wine during the course of the meal. That doesn't look like Mosif ala Kosos, because that wine doesn't have a Bracha to it. There's no Bori Priya Gofen. So it demonstrates the extra cup of wine adding to the number four is the Bori Priya Gofen. That's the code. That's the key. And therefore, with regard to the first kos, he shouldn't add a second kos because he's going to have to make a bor priyag gofen, and then he's nirik and mosif, he's adding a fifth kos. However, once he's already drunk the second kos, then he's entering into a whole new sphere and a whole new phase of the seder, namely the seuda, and at that point he need not make a bor priyag gofen, and therefore it's not nirik and mosif al kosos, then he should be machmir and drink the second kos a second time. This time, get it right with Heseba. As far as the third kos is concerned, that's after the Seuda. Again, if he doesn't have Heseba, he's going to have to repeat the Bori Priya Gofen, and he's near a Kemosif Halakosos. So, Allah Lamaisa, it seems to me, and again, if this becomes relevant, we have to make sure that we're 100% correct here. But from what I read here, it seems to me that the only time, if you're an Ashkenazi, that you will repeat the drinking of the kos, if you didn't have Heseba, would only be with regard to the second kos of Gal Yisrael. That's the only one that will require a repetition. Now, one point about Heseba that I think has to be mentioned, and he says that Heseba requires that he move his entire body, not just his head, and that he lean on something. Some people just lean their body over. That's not Heseba. In such a case, at least with regard to the second course, I would tell them to repeat the drinking. Heseba requires that you lean on something. That's why the best chairs for the night of the Seder are chairs that have arms to them. Not everybody has arm chairs, but if you have arm chairs, then you can lean on the arm. If you don't have arm chairs, then what you have to do is really turn your body around in such a way that your arm is supported by the back of your chair. That's also not so easy. But the point is that Heseba is not just leaning the body, but it's leaning the body on something. Okay, that's important. Now, many have the minug of leaning with karim uksusos. They have this beautiful minug of putting pillows on, behind them, and that's also to show cheres. If a person leans on the right side, he has not fulfilled his mitzvah. And therefore, in the case of matzah for sure, matzah requires Heseba. He's going to have to repeat the eating of the matzah if he accidentally leaned on the right side instead of on the left side. However, some poskim say that a lefty, which is called an iter small, be the eved, if he leaned on his right side instead of his left side, it's like us righties leaning on the left side. So a left guy who's a lefty, a southpaw we used to call it, who leans on his right side, maybe be the eved, he was yotze. Why is it that with regard to Dalid Kosos, as a mitzvah d'rabbanan, we don't find a bracha, asher kidshanu b'mitzvosov, v'tzivanu lishtos, Dalid Kosos. So he has the following explanation. Is everybody with me on this question? We don't make a bracha on the mitzvah of Dalid Kosos. Why not? Why is it inferior to any other mitzvah d'rabbanan? And he says the following. Just one second, just have to find the page. I'm flying here through the whole book.
What
safe is that? This, you weren't here for the introduction. HaSeder HaOrach, this is my Bible for the Seder. It's unbelievable. It has two volumes. I mean, each volume is like 600 pages long. Okay, Reish Samach Hei. Okay, here's what he says. On every mitzvah we recite Asher Kidshanu Mitzvosov, even on a mitzvah the Rabbanan, like Marar Bizman Azeh, but not in the case of Dalid Kosos. And he says the following: Kol mitzvah sheyesh bracha beguf haMitzvah lo titnu aleha bracha. Any mitzvah, the essence of which is a bracha, doesn't have a bracha. For example, Birkas HaMazon. We don't say Asher Kidshanu Mitzvosov Itzivanu Livarech al haMazon. Why is that? Because the mitzvah itself is a bracha. And since the Dalid Kosos, each one requires its own bracha, therefore the bracha becomes integral to the mitzvah, and there's no additional bracha that's necessary. Now, Rabbosa, if I were to ask you, what are the four brachos? This is just a simple quiz question that every first grader should know the answer to. The first cuss is the bracha of what? Nobody? That's bad. The first of the four cups is the bracha of
Matzeti.
Of what?
Matzeti.
No. I'm talking about a bracha, benediction. Baruch Ata Hashem. That bracha on the first cuss ends with what? Kiddush.
Yeah.
The second bracha is the bracha of Gal Yisrael on Magid. The third bracha is
Kiddush.
No, the first bracha was Kiddush. The second bracha was Magid. Baruch Ata Hashem Gal Yisrael. The third bracha is what? Is Birkas Hamazon, and the fourth bracha is Hal. So every one of the four brachos of the four kosos has its own bracha. Okay. Now, to say a few things about matzah. The mitzvah of matzah requires a bracha. Asher kidshanu mitzvos v'tzivanu al achilas matzah. In addition, we add the bracha of shechiyanu, because this is a mitzvah that comes from time to time, and the last time we fulfilled this mitzvah was a year ago. The mitzvah is on the night of Pesach to eat a minimum of one kizayis of matzah. I would say, in terms of the square machine matzahs, to eat, let's say, about two-thirds of a matzah. If you're talking about a handmade matzah, correct? Then I would say it's about half of a matzah would be kizayis. And for the mitzvah of Leil HaSeder, in addition to eating matzah because of Erev Tochlu Matzos, according to many Rishonim, the Rambam is the exception to this rule, the requirement is to eat Lecha Mishnah, like any other yontifs. So we have to eat two matzahs. We break one matzah, that's the middle matzah, which we put away as yachatz for the afikoman, and that's to be eaten at the end of the meal, but again, before Chatzos Lila, we have to check the clock and see this year when is Chatzos. And the two shlemos, that's the top matzah and the third and the bottom matzah, should be combined together, in which case we make hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz on both shlemos. Then we drop one of the matzahs and we make, together with the broken matzah, ham asher kidshanu mitzvos v'tzivanu al achilas matzah. Now at that point, we make a sandwich, so to speak, not the Korach sandwich with Morar, but a sandwich between the Shlema, the whole matzah, and the Prusa, the broken matzah, and we eat together from the two matzos, a broken and a full matzah, a kizayis. Some say we should eat a kizayis from each one of these two matzahs. Others say it's enough if the total is one kizayis. Why do we eat the shlema and the prusa? We eat the shlema because the mitzvah of lechem mishnah. Lechem mishnah requires a complete bread. We eat the prusa because the Torah has a different description of matzah called lechem oni, the bread of a poor man. And the Gemara tells us that poor people couldn't afford to buy a full matzah. What they did is they went to the bakery, and when the bakery had broken matzahs, which went really cheap, sometimes they gave them away free, that's when the oni was able to obtain his matzah. So therefore, we have to eat lechem oni. So we have to eat from the prusa. And we eat from the shlema, as I said, for lechem mishnah, from the prusa, from the mitzvah of achilas matzah, and we're going to eat both together in a kind of a sandwich. That, my friends, is a mitzvah d'oraisa and should be taken with a great deal of simcha. Some people stop eating matzah for a full month before Pesach in order to, you know, conjure it to stimulate their appetite, their taiva for matzah. Some people from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. According to the strict letter of the law, the Yerushalmi says that only on Erev Pesach you have to abstain from eating matzah. There's a whole to-do about eating what's called matzah ashira. Matzah ashira, of course, is matzah that's made with fruit juices, and that matzah is not shmura matzah, cannot be used for the mitzvah of matzah on the Leil HaPesach. We need shmura matzah that's purely water and flour, and therefore it could be possible that you're allowed to eat ney peros dika matzah. Today I've seen grape matzahs. Have you ever seen that? I don't know how great they are, but they're grape matzahs. And people might want to eat grape matzahs on Erev Pesach. However, the Marsha is opposed to it. The Marsha says that anything that looks or resembles a matzah should not be eaten on Erev Pesach. And I would encourage you to follow that rule. We have other ways of filling our belly on Erev Pesach. It's not easy. It's a challenge. And if you don't eat potatoes, you're in trouble. But not to eat any shape or form of a matzah on Erev Pesach.
Just to clarify, on Erev Pesach, as we all know, one shouldn't enter, as I said, starving hungry, so you don't have to concentrate. So what should one eat on Erev Pesach, and how satisfied can one be?
I think you should eat fish. I think you should eat vegetables. What vegetables do you like, Benji?
I'm saying I always go to Grill Plus, and I buy a little kugel, cauliflower ball, a bit of fish.
Cauliflower is excellent.
Right. Then you,
fish is one.
People think
broccoli is great as long as you check it thoroughly for bugs.
But you can't know as you can.
Green beans. Do you like green beans?
Yes.
Sure, eat green beans on Erev Pesach. And not only that, I would say kasha. Now, nobody calls it kasha except for me. In English, it's called buckwheat. In Hebrew, it's called kusemet. And it's great for the stomach, it's very filling, and it's great for Erev Pesach. The only problem is that unless you're a Sephardi, you don't eat kithiel. So you got to worry about that. Quinoa, for example, is a big issue. How many people in this room who are Ashkenazim will eat quinoa during Pesach? Okay, we got two people. That's better than nothing. So why can't you eat quinoa on Pesach? So the OU has decided in the last year or two that quinoa is kidneys. I don't have any clue what that's all about. I rely on the Star K. And frankly speaking, I can't enjoy Pesach without quinoa. I'm a quinoa freak. And we don't have cholent on Pesach without quinoa.
Wow.
So we put up a sign on the outside of our door. If you don't eat quinoa, don't come through our door.
Wow.
We eat quinoa on
Pesach. What can't you eat in our Pesach? Just matzah.
Just not to fill yourself up with matzah or anything that's very, very filling. You want to have a taiva. You want to eat matzah. Bitei ovon, with pleasure. That's why I say, if you enjoy vegetables, then just get lots of vegetables for Erev Pesach. Fish is great, but not everybody could afford it these days. Fish has become exorbitant.
Yeah.
All right, let me just say the following, because we're about to stop for Meyer. If anybody wants to sell chametz afterwards, I'll be around. I'll be around tomorrow night after Meyer for selling chametz.
Chametz online, there's no problem, mate.
I don't know. Honestly, Benji, I'm not trying to tell you I know the answer, because I mamish don't know the answer.
There's nothing in doing physical kinyan. That's what I'm saying.
Look, listen, in my day, I'm just for the old, I'm just the old fuddy-duddy. Yeah, and if you didn't pay the rabbi, that was the one occasion during the whole year that you could express your gratitude to the rabbi. So you came in to sell the chametz, and that's what you did. Now they have ways of doing it online.
There's no need to do a Maaseh Kinyan, is there? It's all just...
You have to appoint the shliach, so I guess they're assuming that when you sign up online, that's called a mini shlichus. Honestly, Benji, you've stumped me at this point. It's not that I'm trying to avoid your question. I'm not trying to be politically correct or anything. I simply don't know the answer to your question. But my blessing to everyone is that we have to see beyond all the work and the cleaning and the hassle of preparing for Pesach. We have to learn about Pesach and the laws of the Pesach. Chazal say that the more you learn about it, the more meaningful it becomes, and that the learning itself is considered part of the kiyum of the mitzvah. We should be zocheh mitzvah Hashem to have an uplifting Seder for us, ourselves, our families. Kein yiratzon. Amen. Okay, then.